The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Coming up today, Jeff meets with newsmakers, shares breaking news, spotlights top community activities and leaders. He'll keep you ahead of the news and informed as you make your way home today. So join Jeff Davis right here, right now, and every day at 5. So stay tuned and you'll have something to talk about over dinner tonight with Hawaii's Tomorrow today. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow today.
Aloha, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis, the solar guy, on this Wednesday, May 22nd. Today is a special show. Not only do we have an amazing panel of guests, but I realized today that is actually the one-year anniversary of us doing this monthly spot, All Things Marine. So I'd like to say special thank yous to Jeff Davis, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, and Kosi Island Earth. Now, with that in mind, today we are going to explore those in marine science who are going above and beyond the normal research duties. We have with us today some amazing graduate students conducting and participating in really exciting outreach programs who have come to share their experiences with us. First up on our show today is Dr. Judy Lemus. She is the director of Kosi Island Earth and a professor at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. She is going to talk to us today about Sea Harmony. So, Judy, not quite a dating site. What is Sea Harmony?
Hey, Carly. Well, Sea Harmony is an online matching site similar to dating sites, but in fact, it was created to help match scientists and educators and resource managers working in ocean science and education to essentially find each other to develop collaborations rather than personal relationships, although if they did that, that would be fine. but the purpose is to really help develop and facilitate those collaborations that I think are difficult for scientists and educators to do on their own.
Now, first off, congratulations. I know you've been working on the site for quite some time now, and you recently just launched the site. Have you gotten a lot of positive feedback so far?
We are getting positive feedback. Actually, the site looks amazing thanks to our developer, our website developer. And I think it has a really accessible feel. It's a very friendly site to use, and we're getting some great feedback. We're also up at about 150 members so far, and that's just about a month into our launch. So we're really excited about the possibilities.
It's an amazing site. I've been on it and been involved with it for some time now, and I'm just so impressed with how it's come together. How does the site work in terms of matching scientists and educators exactly?
Well, it works similar to a dating site in that our users submit a profile, but instead of putting in their personal preferences for relationships, they're putting in collaboration preferences. So, for example, a scientist would put in the ocean science topics that they do research on or are interested in. And you would also put in how often you might be interested in collaborating with someone. You would also put in the age groups and your interaction preferences. For example, there are professionals that might prefer to do just online communication. You can answer emails from students. That would be an easy way to get involved in education as a scientist. Or you might be a teacher in a classroom who's looking for a scientist to come visit your classroom. So you'd put that in your collaboration preferences. And then we essentially match people based on those collaboration preferences. So there's an algorithm that matches all of those categories of preferences. I believe there are 7, and gives you your matches actually based on those preferences.
That's so nice. So people actually wanting to get involved in education can kind of set those limits or set what exactly they want to do and be paired. That's a smart way of doing that.
Yeah, exactly. They can completely tailor it to what their own interests are, what their availability is, what they're comfortable with. So if you're not comfortable working with kindergarten students, then you can just prefer to work with older students. And then the nice thing is that people aren't getting requests constantly that are not necessarily matched with what they're comfortable doing or what their availability is.
And they don't just get matched on individual basis. There's also opportunities and collaborations that they can get matched on as well. How does that work?
Yeah, opportunities that are up on the site are just open opportunities that any of our members can post. And those kind of go out to the entire community. And it's a way to have another level of interaction. And so perhaps you're not necessarily matched with someone in particular for all of your collaboration preferences, but you've got a project that you're really interested in starting, or you've got a project that you've got ongoing, or there's an event coming up that you're looking to actually interact with someone in education or science. And I should mention that what the site does is actually match scientists, educators, resource managers, and traditional practitioners across those disciplines. And so your matches will be those professionals working outside of your normal professional area. So scientists would get matched with educators and resource managers and traditional practitioners, and then vice versa, educators would get matched with scientists and so on.
Now, this has been developed specifically for Hawaii, but you've been getting quite a bit of interest on a national level with the site. Are there plans to expand?
Yeah, there are plans to expand, and we were just at a national COSI meeting, and we got a lot of interest from other COSI centers, actually, to expand this site. I've also had some interest from some folks at NOAA that are quite interested in this. So what we're currently doing is expanding our capacity for the site, because we do have right now a limitation for preferences and locations that are sort of specific to Hawaii, and that was intentional so that we could test the site essentially in Hawaii. But I think probably within the next few months, we'll have the capacity to go national. And so people can actually have virtual collaborations as well as in-person collaborations. And you can get matched with essentially anyone anywhere.
Now, Sea Harmony is your brainchild. How did you come up with this amazing idea?
Thank you for that. Actually, I think it just cropped up as a need in the community. It's not really, I think the idea has floated out there for a while, a need for a way for scientists and educators and the community to find each other. Essentially, when I've talked to my colleagues in science, a lot of them are interested in education and outreach, but they don't know how to start. They don't know who to contact. So there's a lot of interest, but a lack of know-how. A lack of knowing who to contact, how you would even get started. And so when we proposed COSI Island Earth originally, we thought that this online system might be a good way to try out. And it is experimental in some sense, so we're trying to see actually if it will work. It looks like it's going to, but we're going to continue to sort of monitor that and make sure that it's as functional as it can be for everyone.
Well, I like that you're being a matchmaker, risk taker. That's pretty unbelievable. Now, on the site, too, you have collaboration stories, which show some really cool examples of scientists and educators working together already. So it's a great site for people to get ideas. How do those work?
Yeah, those are actually posted as success stories. And those right now are just examples of great collaborations that have cropped up between scientists and the community or educators or traditional knowledge holders. For example, one of our collaboration stories that's posted has to do with Opihi monitoring. And we've had a group of scientists at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology work with those that have been collecting Opihi for many generations, and they've started this collaborative monitoring project for Opihi in Hawaii. We have another project in which scientists were working in the Heia wetland area, and we were training community organization members to initiate a volunteer water quality monitoring program. So we've got a lot of great projects out there. Another one, just as an example of another one off island, off of Oahu, the Kahikili herbivorous fisheries management area is another great collaboration in which scientists and resource managers and the community all got together to create this volunteer monitoring program and management area for herbivorous fish for a reef system.
So where can people go to check out this Sea Harmony site if they are interested in getting involved in some science education collaborations?
Well, that's really simple, seaharmony.org. So SEAHARMONEY.org.
Okay. Well, I hope that some people get a chance to use the site, not for dating purposes, but for collaborations, and are able to check it out. We are going to be chatting with some grad students coming up after this quick traffic break. I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors, R&R Solar and Rolf Chris, Kona Red, Edible Hawaiian Islands, and Inter-Island Solar Supply and Kali Judd.
760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Several accidents right now. The latest was downtown on King Street by Honolulu Holly. We also had one at Fern and McCulley. The drive east to Hawaii Kai is good. No slowdowns on the freeway. Windward Drive, normal on the Poly, the Likelike, and the H3. Going west, the Moanalua slows at the Fort Shafter overpass. H1 slows at the airport exit on the viaduct. And inbound traffic from the west slows at Middle Street.
Hawaii high school students will love science camps. You'll spend this summer in nature's greatest laboratory as you explore firsthand the volcanoes, rocks, forests, oceans, and skies of the Big Island of Hawaii. We're now accepting applications online. Go to sciencecampsamerica.com.
Can you believe this traffic? Ridiculous. And did you hear about the new product show coming up?
Ah, those shows are always the same products every time.
That's not what I heard. You can win Vegas trips from Vacations Hawaii and free stuff from 7-Eleven. Eat plenty local grinds and see different kind products.
Wow! The new product show? Sounds good. It's new. Fun, food, prizes, and introducing travel options for us locals. Ocean activities and castle resort staycations. It's coming June 7th to the 9th at the Blaisdell. The new product show.
The sun is the root source of energy in food, fossil fuels, and wind energy. The clearest use of the sun's energy is solar power. BanQu Solar brings to Hawaii a technological breakthrough that maximizes the power from each solar module. With our AC Unison system, BanQ Solar's AC Unison modules have microinverters on each module that converts DC electricity to AC electricity, allowing your system to produce 5 to 25% more power than other solar systems. It's cost-effective, has a 25-year warranty, and an attractive all-black design. The AUO BenQ Solar Company is one of the most trusted companies in the solar industry. With state and federal incentives in place and utility rates going up, now is the time to generate your own electricity with a beautiful BenQ solar system. It looks great, produces more power than standard solar systems, and saves you money in the process. Call 554-7200 for your local BenQ solar installer and enjoy your savings now.
Over the past century, more than 90% of koa forests in Hawaii have disappeared as tropical hardwood prices have skyrocketed. Hawaii's koa forests are an important part of our ecosystem and a symbol of our island heritage. Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Hawaii's Tomorrow need your help to repopulate 1,000 acres on the Big Island with new koa trees. For $60, you can sponsor your very own koa legacy tree on the slopes of Mauna Kea. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Along with a beautifully engraved personalized certificate, $20 will also be donated to the charity or organization of your choice. Gift a gift that grows grander year after year. And see how simple the act of planting a tree can change the face of the planet. To plant your Hawaiian Koa Legacy Tree, go to hawaiistomorrow.com and click on the Legacy Tree icon. Again, hawaiistomorrow.com. That's Hawaii's with an S, tomorrow.com.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, filling in for Jeff Davis, the solar guy. The students that we have chatting with us today, in addition to working with COSI, have all been part, or some of them have been part, of the Sea Grant Graduate Trainee Program, which requires outreach, public presentation, and a public article in the Sea Grant magazine. These requirements, like COSI, are designed to integrate research, education, and outreach into the students' graduate research. With us now, we have a former Sea Grant student and a RA with COSI, Cheryl Leon Soon, a graduate who is a doctoral candidate in the Oceanography Department at the University of Hawaii. Cheryl's research focuses on understanding coastal ecosystem structure and function with today's practices. Today, Cheryl's here to talk about her education experiences with science at our nearby fish pond. So, welcome to the show, Cheryl.
Thanks, Carly.
Tell me, what first got you excited about marine science?
Actually, growing up, I used to watch a lot of documentaries with my uncle, some nature documentaries, and then he shared a few old National Geographic magazines with me, and I think from since then, I've just been kind of stuck in it.
And so, why include education? Why not just do science?
I think the education sort of came to me a little bit with a little bit of fate. Different opportunities just came along the way. After high school, I had a chance to teach co-curricular subjects at a primary school at home, which is for ages 5 to 12. And then after my undergraduate work, I worked with the Department of Environmental Protection in Florida in their environmental education division. And then here, I happened to have the opportunity to work with Judy in the LAIP program as well. So education sort of found me, I think.
And you mentioned the LAIP program. What is that?
It is the Laulima Aike Pono program, and it's a collaborative effort between the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and Paipai Ohe'ea, which is the nonprofit that manages the He'ea Fish Pond.
And so you've done a lot of work at the fish pond then.
I have indeed.
So primarily your research or also education?
Both. We have been able to actually incorporate the two things through this LAIP program. And we've been doing it for 3 years now. And I've actually been able to work with, I think, over 40 interns over that time. And the way we've done it is they actually work on my research projects. And I have been fortunate enough to have them help me with collecting samples and looking at the data and asking some cool questions in the fish pond.
Excellent. And so what kind of questions are you asking for your research?
Well, part of my project is looking at primary production in coastal areas, and we're interested in some of the invasive species of macroalgae here. So Gorilla Ogo is one, Acanthophora specifera. And in the fish pond in particular, we're looking at how coverage changes from season to season, how they take up nutrients and such. And so the interns have been working on that with me.
And in your experience, do you think that the education flows really nicely with your project, or how do you outreach to not only students but to the community?
Yeah, I think it actually connects really well. I've been really lucky that they happen to be two things that I enjoy, so it's been kind of easy for me to teach about my science, per se. But the internship program is open to all community members, not just students. And so we've had people from a broad range of backgrounds come into the program, and so we've been able to reach the community at large that way.
And so for the most part, you've done a lot of mentorship with younger students that are interested in sciences.
Yes, quite right, yeah.
And how has that experience been for you? What do you think you get out of that experience, and what do they get out of that experience?
It's been a really amazing experience because, like I said, we've had students from so many different backgrounds and across a wide age range, actually. You know, they ask some of the most amazing questions, and oftentimes the answer is, I just do not know. And so they have forced me to kind of dig some more into my own work in order to explain things to them. And a lot of them have said, you know, because of the program, they've become more interested in marine science now, and they understand better why some things are important, and they want to get into the field. So it's been a really good exchange.
And so as you continue on with your education, you know, you're going to graduate with your doctorate. Do you plan to continue to be involved with education?
I would very much like it to be a part of my life and my job. My ideal situation would be able to continue doing environmental monitoring and research and still be able to work with students developing small projects that they could complete and trying to answer cool questions and work with community groups, you know.
And so you have worked with a lot of community groups already at the fish pond doing some hands-on science. Does that make science less scary for people? Do you think it's more palatable? palatable that way? Sorry.
Absolutely. I think it makes the science very tangible. And oftentimes people have questions that we do have the answers to and things that they could answer for themselves or things that they see in their everyday lives that, you know, somehow just click and make sense when they come work with us and get their hands dirty and actually see what it is. So, and I think a lot of times they don't realize how intuitive science can be because sometimes they already do know the answers and they just want to chat about it. And so I think the collaboration and working with them has made science a whole lot more tangible for a lot of people.
And your research is very applicable to that. I mean, it's a very interesting subject matter.
Absolutely. I really like it. And I like when others show interest in it. And I think I was very fortunate to be able to do research in such a special place because one of the main goals of Paepae'o is restoration of the fish pond. And so they are interested in what these invasive species are doing. And the place, this fish pond has lots of cultural relevance. And so I feel really fortunate to have the opportunity to work there.
And so what kind of methods do you use particularly for your work? How do you look at these invasive species?
So for distribution, we're actually doing things as simple as using quadrats. And that's basically a little square made out of PVC of a known area. We basically put it down on the seafloor and we look at what's inside there. So we look at percent cover. Is half of it covered with this species and the other half covered with another species? And we record that. So we go to different locations around the pond and we record that information and put it on a map. It's one example.
Excellent. And you said it changes from seasons to seasons. What have you found so far?
Absolutely. Coverage changes because some of these species are sensitive to salinity. And so you find in the rainy season when we have higher freshwater inputs from the River Makaha and more rainfall and so on, you find coverage might shift from season to season. So Gracilaria salicornia might have a higher percent coverage in one area of the fish pond, whereas Acanthophora specifera might have a different coverage. And that could be important because these things provide habitat for other organisms. And so looking at primate production kind of feeds all the way through the food web because other organisms rely on those.
Can you, and I think I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit, think of any examples where you've had someone from the community or a previous student mentor that you've worked with that's really taken to the work or been inspired to continue their interest or learning in science from their experience or work with the fish pond?
Yes, actually. I'm going to call her name, Kailina Lamadrid. She's actually an undergraduate student at UH Manoa in the marine biology program, I believe, and we actually did a project aside from what she was doing in the fish pond with me because she was so interested in marine science, and I think she's a very keen worker and a really keen scientist, and she has maintained her interest in marine science, and I think she'll move forward with it.
Oh, that makes me so happy to hear. That warms my outreach heart. That's fantastic. So the you've done education programs in different parts of the world, mm-hmm. and how do they compare your experiences here versus elsewhere?
I did some education things at home in Florida, like I said before, and here, and all three have been really different because they've been three absolutely different environments. So I'm from Trinidad and Tobago, and at home after high school, I had an opportunity to teach co-curricular subjects to students from ages 5 to 12. And so I was actually doing things like teaching arts and crafts, and that was totally different from teaching science. But, working with 5-year-olds is very different from 15-year-olds.
Sometimes.
In Florida, it was a very structured program. I worked with the Department of Environmental Protection, and we traveled around the state, actually going from school to school, doing field labs with them. And so in that respect, it's a little bit similar to the work that I do here in terms of it's always outside in the field. But here in Hawaii, I think through the LAIP program, we have a really unique opportunity to make the science very tangible because a lot of the work is done in the field. The students collect the samples, they process them, and they look at the back end of things. So they look at the data that comes out of it. And we also try to develop questions together. So we design experiments together. And so they have a really unique opportunity here to go through the entire scientific process.
Well, and I'll call out, too, not just for the students, but for you as well. I mean, being a student at the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, I mean, what an amazing opportunity. You're right there at Moku'uloi or Coconut Island, and you have reefs right there that you can study where a lot of marine institutes don't have that luxury.
Absolutely. We've been really lucky to have the facilities that enable us to do some of this real time and some quick research projects.
Well, Cheryl, you've just been an amazing inspiration in terms of a student who is a perfect example of someone who incorporates outreach and education into their projects. Is there anything else you want to share with us?
Well, I'd like to encourage people to volunteer at the Fish Pond. They're always looking for more hands. They're currently doing lots of restoration projects, and this happens on the second and fourth Saturdays. So you could go to their website and look it up. And there's also lots of tours of Coconut Island. So if you're interested in science, you can go to our website, go to the community education program and check it out. Come out, maybe have a chat with some of these scientists out there and just get involved.
Thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
You're welcome. Mahalo, Carly.
Mahalo. We're going to continue our chat with the Collaborative Fellowship recipients, Danielle Hull and Leilani Bright, right after a traffic break. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, Natural Energy Lab, Honolulu Weekly, Sabrina's Restaurant, Hawaii Nanotech Glass Coating, Focused Energy, and Hawaii Legacy Hardwares.
KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Our slowest traffic right now is going west. The H1 is stop and go when you get about halfway down the airport viaduct. The Moanalua slows right after the Middle Street overpass, and expect it to be slow until you get up past the Waimalu Pearl City exit. Inbound traffic from the west slows at Ola Lane. Windward Drive, normal on the Poly of the Like Like, the H3. No problems going east to Hawaii Kai on the freeway or on Kalaniana Oli Highway.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's 2 decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
280,000 acres. That's the size of Molokai, Lanai, and Kahoolawe put together. It's also the amount of the prime farmable ag land designated in Hawaii. 280,000 acres. That's a lot of prime farmable ag land, and it needs to be preserved for agriculture. Aloha, I'm Dean Okimoto of Nalo Farms, and this fact is brought to you by Ho'opili, a new community where commercial farms, neighborhood, and home gardens will be part of the community's design. And there's so much more. Log on to www.ho'opili'oahu.com.
Our Lord commands us to love each other as He has loved us and to bear each other's burdens. Hawaii has over 1,200 abused and neglected keiki in foster care. Hui Ho'omalu is asking for your kokua to provide a safe, loving, and temporary home for our children with an urgent need for families willing to accept teens and siblings. Be a reflection of God's love for children and become a resource family today. For more information, call Partners in Development Foundation, Hui Ho'omalu Program at 441-1117 or visit our website at pidfoundation.org.
Aloha! This is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. The solar industry has changed enormously in the last 3 years. So many companies have entered the market that one of the most asked questions I hear is, what makes your company different? Solar Services Hawaii has been serving Oahu and neighbor islands for more than 20 years. Solar Services was awarded the best inspection rate statewide from the Hot Water Rebate Program. We were number one. Solar Services is a local family company. We recognize the need for service with Aloha. I personally have given a class for the IRS. I've lectured many, including 2 luncheons with the National Association of Tax Preparers. Roof penetration and tax issues are my focus. For all solar products, meaning hot water, photovoltaic, pool and spa heating, solar pool pumps, solar attic fans, you name it. We specialize in photovoltaics and hot water. And of course, a free estimate is available. Just call my phone, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. You have a great day and aloha.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to my dad, the solar guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. With us now, we have Danielle Hull and Lena Ala Bright, both graduate students at the University of Hawaii. Now, both of you have very different majors and are somewhat of an unlikely duo. Why don't you tell us first how you came together?
Aloha, Carly.
Aloha.
Well, I am a Hawaiian Studies major, and my dean from Hawaii Nui Akea came to me and asked if I wanted to do this collaborative event with a marine science student. I do a lot of internship, but kind of volunteer work in CTAR, but a little weak in the science area, so I thought it'd be amazing to work with Danielle on a project.
So what's CTAR?
College of Tropical Ag and Human Resources, the aquaponics aquaculture program.
Excellent. And so, Danielle, how did you get roped into this?
So Judy Lemus, the director of Cozy Island Earth, contacted my advisor, Kathleen Rettenberg, who then put Judy and I in touch. We met, and Judy described the fellowship, and I thought it sounded like a worthwhile and impactful project, and I was eager to get involved.
Excellent. And so you guys are working together, bringing your different disciplines on a similar project. Can you tell us a little bit about that project?
Okay. The project is actually a focus for my thesis. We're working with medicinal plants. I'm a practitioner of La'alopa'au and Lomi Lomi. We're looking at the plant Auhuhu, which is a fish poison plant called hola. And I have looked at this plant earlier as an anesthetic and also for medicine. So we're going to look now at it a little more in depth with growth and yield and the quality, but growing it in soil versus aquaponics.
Oh, that's amazing. That is a really interesting project. And Danielle, what's your role with that work?
Yeah, so my thesis research is actually based in Hei'a Fish Pond, looking at storm events and the effects that it has on primary productivity in the phytoplankton community. And I'm pretty much taking the background that I have on nutrients and nutrient cycling and nutrient analyses and placing them in the aquaponic system. So I will be doing an evaluation of the nutrients throughout the growth period within the aquaponic systems and also in the final leaves in the yield to see how the nutrients could be affecting growth, whether beneficially or adversely.
And so what do you guys hope to find in bringing these two different ideas or research projects together?
Well, it's really exciting. Danielle she just opens up another world for me to look at a more in-depth science, take a look at the science that it surrounds the growth of the auhuhu. The scientific name is Tephrosia purpurea, and the active ingredient, the tephrosin, is the fish narcotic, but we have found that 0.2 grams per liter works as an anesthetic. And we've looked at the medicine, using it for medicine. So what I'm hoping is that we can really define the actual tephrosin, the quantity that's actually in the leaf and the root in the seed pods, and hoping to find that maybe aquaponics or soil, which system for yield and growth and quality is actually a more beneficial agricultural system for growing this plant.
Now, I understand both of you are the first to receive this interdisciplinary fellowship that from Cozy Island Earth that brought you guys together. Danielle, what is this fellowship like? What do you have to do for it?
So the fellowship is intended to be a one-year fellowship linking, we've mentioned, students from very different disciplines. And the goal is to complete a collaborative project in which the strengths of the participants combine to produce a more impactful end result than what could have been done solitarily.
Excellent. That's amazing. Well, it looks like we have a call in here. Let's try and put the person on the air. Are you with us? Hello?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Carly Weiner, Marine Science Gal. Happy birthday to you. Congratulations on your one-year birthday.
Oh, well, awesome. Thank you very much, Jeff. I really appreciate you calling in. That's great.
Yeah, and then, of course, you're talking about one of my favorite topics, marine sciences. In this case, the fish pond is awesome. Thank you very much, both of you, all three of you, for doing what you're doing over there, educating. And then, on another note, you guys might catch my show this Friday. And, you know, I've had recently Greta Abbey on, and a lot of folks from the marine science due to the coral disease we're experiencing on the North Shore of Hawaii. And we're going to have Terry Lilly, the documenter of this stuff, live in the studio, along with Ruby Lee Johnson. Anybody know who Ruby Johnson is?
No, I don't. Sorry.
She used to be my mother-in-law.
Lovely.
Who am I?
Ruby Johnson headed the UH Studies program. She translated the Kumalipo. She's an author, scholar, Kamehameha bloodline, and one of the most revered Hawaiian cultural people about, as well as languages and genealogists. Hmm. You will love it. And she's coming on because she is on the board of the Hanalei River nonprofit. And, of course, we're looking at some really interesting issues with why the reefs on Kauai are taking such huge hits and disappearing at such huge, huge, fantastic rates.
Well,
and I presume that without people like you doing studies and everybody else I've been running into in the marine world, we'd really be in a world of hurt. You know, I think a lot of times, gang, people don't understand in the general public what good all this is, so to speak. You know, the science itself, the education thereof. I don't think without the education, could we push to Hawaii tomorrow anywhere near as fast as we are
and the,
with this education.
And the indigenous knowledge, our kupuna's knowledge, is very important to bring that forward and looking at some of the different ways we can look at in handling the many challenges that we have.
Well, I don't know how many tens of thousands of Hawaiians were living in Hanalei with the reefs were in good shape because of the laws of the Hawaiians and the stewardship and the rules that you could not break, the kapus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but now we've got an insignificant population, but our practices are decimating the health of a reef to the point where it's being attacked and has got no defenses. Anyway, that's a Friday show. I want you guys to continue with yours. And one more time, congratulations, Kari, on getting through your first year.
Thanks,
Jeff. You're
doing
a great job. Really good job.
I appreciate that. And it sounds like you have an important show on Friday, so be sure to listen to that.
That would be neat.
Excellent.
All right, girls,
aloha.
I'm all ears.
All
Keep
right.
educating me. Aloha.
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 Thanks, Jeff, for calling in. So, ladies, we were just talking about this interdisciplinary fellowship that you guys are working on together. Has there been any specific challenges or benefits that you've encountered from working in a new discipline or being your eyes being open to new disciplines?
We've had both. Yeah, the benefits are amazing because it's just, it's obvious the combination of indigenous knowledge with contemporary science. We both really have learned a lot, and we've kind of found a balance on supporting each other. It's difficult too, though, because we're in total different arenas of studies. So, and we're working with plants. They don't follow a timeline. You know, they're their own timeline. So I don't know if we're meeting all of COSI's fellowship's timeline there, but it's been really good.
Yeah, and I know, you know, I feel like one of the challenges is maybe we are sometimes a little overambitious. We have probably expanded the project beyond the necessary size just because our research questions just keep going and going and going, and we want to be able to look at all of the different aspects of the project. As a result, we are not necessarily capable of completing all the analytical techniques ourselves. So we have been needing extra funds, which has taken some time to acquire. But fortunately, a lot of groups are stepping in. I know the Diversity and Equity Initiative helped fund some of our samples and supplies, which has been great. So that's definitely been one of the challenges, constraining our ambitions.
Well, I think any student who has gone through graduate school can identify with restraining those opportunities or questions that you have. The more you study something, I find, you know, the more questions you have and the more you want to look at it. So I think that is a common challenge that we've all experienced. So what are your plans going forward with this project? Do you have future goals with your research?
Yes, actually, with the auhuhu, right now there is a ban on the use of the auhuhu, which acts like a rotenoid. But we're hoping with positive results in looking at how the auhuhu affects the coral reef, marine life, which I know from our kupuna's knowledge from archival research that it doesn't have an effect. We might be able to use ahuhu traditionally again as to, well, with traditionally in that as a fishing technique, but also as an anesthetic. And we're hoping that it could be used maybe in other areas for getting rid of invasive species also.
Well, I know we could use some help with that, so I am excited to see where your research goes. And I guess the last question I have is how is it influenced by public education? Is your work applicable to the community?
Oh, definitely. Yep. So being a Lomi Lomi and La'alapa'au practitioner, I already use the ahuhu in my work. I make Lomi oils and do different types of medicines with the plant. We call it makavalu, so I like to work with plants that you can look at in many different ways for different uses. So, and the plant is scarce on Oahu, so we're propagating it and doing a good job and have seed. And in fact, the plants we're using for this project it's the second generation for it.
Amazing. You both have really cool projects, and it's so interesting to see the intersection of both of your work. So thank you so much for being here with us today. Up next, we're going to chat with Emily and Chris, who are going to be talking about what it's like to be a nerd in Honolulu. I'd like to acknowledge some of our sponsors, Tom Moffitt Productions, Island Cooling, UH Federal Credit Union, the Manila Hotel, and D.R. Horton Schuler Homes.
760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
No problems to the windward side on the Poly, the Leke-Leke, or the H3. If you're headed up the windward coast, expect rain along Kamehameha Highway. The drive east to Hawaii Kai is good. No major slowdown today on the Kahala Viaduct. If you're going west, the Moanalua is still backed up to the 4th Chapter Overpass. The H1 slows at the Airport Viaduct, and it's going to be stop and go until you get around the Hickam Curve.
Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis, with a sure bet for you and your family. If you or someone you know believes they are living in a neighborhood that has no room on the grid to install more photovoltaics to erase your electricity bill, I can do it. I will guarantee to get your home approved by HECO, or I'll give you $100. Again, if you need PV on your home and you're under the impression that your neighborhood or your grid is full to saturation, I, Jeff Davis, the solar guy, can get your home installed and connected to HECO's net metering program, or I'll give you a $100 call-up bill. You just call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200, 554-7200. Aloha.
Want to go green for your home or business? Hawaii Community Reinvestment Corporation introduces its new Green Sun Hawaii program, an innovative public-private partnership to make energy improvements affordable for everyone. Green Sun Hawaii gives you the power to significantly reduce your utility bill. Visit Hawaii National Bank or other participating lenders or one of the many authorized energy contractors for more information. Or visit greensunhawaii.com and click on the easy-to-use loan application.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
If you would like to join Jeff Davis and his guests on the air, call now at 296-5467. That's 296-5467. Now back to the Solar Guy.
You're listening to Hawaii's Tomorrow with Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy.
Welcome back. With us now is Emily Norton and Chris Drury, graduate students in the Oceanography Department at the University of Hawaii. They are also both self-proclaimed nerds. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carly. Thank you.
Now, you guys are both responsible for bringing Nerd Night to Honolulu. And for those of us that haven't heard of this unbelievable event, can you tell us a little bit about what it is?
Sure. Nerd Night's an informal lecture series held already in 50 cities worldwide, and it's held at a bar. So it's composed of three fun yet intelligent presentations with live or DJed music, and we entertain the audience but also try to teach them a little something, usually pretty esoteric. And it's kind of like TED Talks, which maybe you've heard of, but a bit more raucous, and there's a lot of beer involved.
I personally think it's like a rock concert for scientists. You know, it's not your traditional science talk. I mean, I've never laughed so hard in my life. Can you give us some examples of topics you guys have covered before?
Sure. Well, some of the things that I've particularly enjoyed that we've had speakers talk about are, we had Rich Pyle, who's a scientist at the Bishop Museum, talk about some of his diving on very, very deep coral reefs. So the engineering that's necessary to be able to go down to 400 feet and come back up alive, some of the species that they find down there, things like that. We've also had folks talk about the shortcomings of the Scrabble dictionary and dictionaries in general. We had someone talk about the overtone series, how to sing better, ornithological capacity.
That was awesome, because the whole bar was singing and dancing by the end.
I missed that one, but I should have definitely been there for that.
Yeah, for sure. You missed out. I'm sorry.
No, I mean, you said these nerd nights happen all over the world, or at least in the United States. Is it international?
All over the world.
Okay.
Yeah.
And have you attended any outside of Hawaii yourselves?
No.
I haven't yet, although I've got a friend who's relatively active in the group in San Francisco. I know folks in New York that have been to the one in New York, so hopefully when I'm visiting, I can go to one.
There's also a Nerd Night Global Festival coming up. It's the first one. It's going to be this summer. It's August 16th through 18th in Brooklyn, New York, so I might try to check that out.
Oh, that would be unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you represent Hawaii well if you decide to go. I mean, not many people associate beer and science together. For the skeptics out there, has this been a successful venture for you guys?
I would say Emily and I were talking about this a little bit, and I think our impression is, for someone who is not a scientist or doesn't work in the sciences, probably you would think you shouldn't or don't associate beer and drinking with science. For us and all the scientists we know, drinking is a big part of being a scientist. So for us, it makes a lot of sense. You know, when you go to something like a scientific meeting, you're just waiting to the end of the day to get the free beers so you can all socialize and enjoy your time and things of that sort. So I would say it's been really, really successful, both among the scientists here in Hawaii as well as the general public.
And let's be clear on the show, we are not promoting alcoholism in any manner. We just think it's important for scientists that work very hard to have some fun and to educate in more or informal audiences and different venues as well.
Yeah, it's a great way to connect scientists from UH primarily so far with members of the public that they wouldn't run into on their everyday lives.
Now, have you guys gotten a good mix of, tenured faculty versus graduate students, or how's that going?
We've had mostly graduate students so far, but we would love to have more faculty speak. Kevin Wang spoke at the second Nerd Night, I think. And is he the only tenured faculty?
I think he's the only faculty member so far, although I have a few that are on my short list of people to get up there. We've had a few faculty members attend Nerd Night just to come and enjoy with everyone else, and certainly a lot of community members as well.
So what do you guys have planned for the future? Is this going to continue, and how often does it go on?
So Nerd Night is held the second Wednesday of every month at Mercury Bar in Chinatown. So our next event is on Wednesday, June 12th at 8 p.m., and we have Matt Lurie talking about charismatic megaflora and how plants are represented in pop culture. We also have John Whitney talking about the title of his talk is pretty awesome. It's Battle in the Bulge, the Silent Saga of Conflict After Conception. So he'll be talking about the maternal-fetal conflict. And then Lee Shannon is going to talk about the ecology of an underwater demolition range and its effect on local marine fauna, especially dolphins.
How to not accidentally blow up a dolphin.
Important questions like that will be answered.
Are very important questions. I definitely want to hit that one up about the not blowing up a dolphin. That should be pretty interesting. Now, you also have to note that you guys have amazing advertising. If you haven't seen the Nerd Night posters, you have to check out, I think you guys have a Facebook page, right? Your posters, can you tell us a little bit about them? Because they're fantastic. I wish I could show them on air.
They are super groovy. They're designed by Ilan Portner, who is unfortunately leaving his post as graphic designer. So, yeah, we're looking for a replacement if anyone out there is interested. But the posters usually combine all of the topics that we have represented that night. So this time we have a mother with a baby dolphin in her womb, and the umbilical cord has been transformed into a tree. And the baby dolphin is holding a grenade. Yeah.
Amazing. It's really nice to see, though, as something different, you know, science kind of made a little more accessible and a little more interesting and fun for, you know, the general public. Do you guys have a favorite talk that you've had at Nerd Night so far?
I would say for me, it would be really difficult to pick a favorite because we've had so many really, really good talks. And, you know, all sorts of different topics within the sciences, but also social science, art, music, things like that. And one of the things that we're trying very hard to do is make sure that we're getting a wide diversity of topics. We want to have a lot of cool things going on there.
We started pretty narrowly in the marine sciences because both Chris and I are in oceanography, but we're really trying to diversify now. So we just had one really cool talk on traffic in Honolulu given by Clay McKell.
That's amazing. Well, we have actually a caller on the air. Lester, can you hear us?
Hello.
Hi, Lester. Thanks for calling in. Did you have a question for one of our panelists today?
Yeah, the scientist that's working on that Ahuhu fish narcotic.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I use that to go fishing?
No, right now it's banned.
Oh, why is it banned?
You know, I'm not certain, but it was probably due to misuse.
Okay. Too many people using it?
Oh, you know, I haven't heard of it being used, and it's very hard to find. So, you know, I'm not sure. I think it was overall banned with, I hear some horrible stories about people using Clorox and different things on our reefs to catch fish in an easy manner. So even if we were able to use it, we would really have to exercise a lot of caution, and it probably would be better to be used in like a real limited permit type situation.
Do you think scientists could use it?
I think that we might be working towards that, but we're at the real preliminary stages right now. And you have to remember, I am a traditional practitioner, so my goal is more really actually to for us to be able to use it as a practitioner.
Okay. Well, hey, thank you guys so much.
Thanks for calling in, Lester.
Bye.
Bye. Mahalo. Thanks for that, Colin. We always love hearing from our listeners. So, before we wrap up today, Emily, Chris, if people want a good Nerd Night, can you just tell us the details one more time? And if they want to go online and see these posters, where do they go?
Sure. So we are at Mercury Bar every second Wednesday of the month, and the talks start at 8 p.m. And you can check us out on Facebook at Nerd Night Honolulu or online at honolulu.nerdnight.com.
And our next event is going to be 3 weeks from today. I hope to see you all there.
Excellent. And if there are any graduate faculty listening right now and we want to rope them into Nerd Night, where can they go if they'd like to start
talking? They can email me at emily@nerdnight.com or chris@nerdnight.com.
Or stagger up to us after a Nerd Night event in a semi-inebriated state and just tell us that they want to. That works too.
That's excellent. Well, I want to take a moment today to thank all of our guests who could join us. We've gotten the opportunity to explore various types of marine science, and not only marine science, but marine science education and outreach that's been undertaken by the next generation of marine science students. So thank you so much to Danielle and Cheryl and Lena Alla and Judy, who were with me today to chat about this important subject. And also a special thank you to the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology and Kosi Island Earth, and to Jeff Davis, especially on our one-year anniversary of the All Things Marine monthly edition of Hawaii's Tomorrow. So I'm Carly Weiner. Thanks for listening. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.